Hello and welcome back to the Actual News Podcast. My name is Olga Nestrova and today is January 6th. And before we begin, I want to state that we will never forget what happened on January 6th and we will never forget those who suffered on the attempt and the attack on the U.S. Capitol that day. And today I got for you, Donald Trump is now certified as the next president of the United States. Current President Biden signed Social Security Fairness Act. Canadian Prime Minister Trudeau to step down and other national and global news. All actual news, by the way. Let's go. And I hope you are comfortable because we begin, per usual, with the quick news, and we have a lot of quick news today. In his op-ed, President Joe Biden reflected on the significance of January 6th, stressing that while the peaceful certification of the presidential election was then a routine event, it should never have been taken for granted. He recalled the violent insurrection that took place on January 6, 2021, when rioters stormed the Capitol, threatening elected officials and law enforcement officers. Biden called for on Americans to remember the gravity of that day and to resist efforts to downplay or rewrite the history of the attack. He underscored that the nation had to honor the sacrifices of those who fought for democracy and commit to defending it for future generations. The op-ed concluded with Biden's pledge to uphold the peaceful transfer of power and the reminder that democracy, even in America, was not guaranteed. Other news, U.S. Congress has certified the presidential election results. U.S. President-elect Donald Trump asked a New York judge on Monday to delay his January 10th sentencing on his criminal conviction on charges stemming from hush money paid to a porn star, citing presidential immunity. Idaho's abortion ban laws appear set to remain unchanged by state lawmakers this year as legislators await the result of lawsuits challenging the bans. Federal Reserve Vice Chair for Supervision Michael Barr announced on Monday that he will step down from his regulatory role effective February 28, though he will remain on the Fed board as a governor. The central bank stated that no major rulemakings would proceed until a successor is confirmed. Barr, a Democrat, was reportedly facing a potential legal dispute with President-elect Trump, who may have sought to remove him from his position before his term was set to end in July 2026. Jay Bratt, a senior national security official at the U.S. Justice Department and a lead prosecutor in the case accusing Trump of illegally retaining classified documents, has retired from the department, a spokesperson confirmed on Monday. Bratt had been detailed to special counsel Jack Smith's office and stepped down on Friday. The retirement comes as Trump, set to return to presidency on January 20th, has vowed to investigate political opponents and others who have accused him of misconduct. A group of up to 300 Afghan nationals eligible for resettlement in the United States has arrived in the Philippines for temporary hosting while their U.S. visas are processed. Many of them worked for the U.S. government in Afghanistan before the American withdrawal in 2021. Washington is funding their stay in Manila as part of bilateral agreement announced last August. Pope Francis on Monday named a Catholic cardinal who has criticized Donald Trump's political agenda as the new leader for the Catholic Church in Washington, D.C., days before Trump is set to be inaugurated as U.S. president. Amazon Prime will release a documentary about Melania Trump later this year. Filming started in December with Melania serving as an executive producer. Iran said on Monday that the detention of an Iranian national in Italy at the request of the U.S. amounted to hostage-taking. Iranian businessman Mohammed Abedini was detained in Milan last month. He is wanted by the United States on suspicion of involvement in a drone strike against U.S. forces in Jordan. Iran has denied involvement. And by the way, President Biden is almost on his way to Italy. He will depart Washington, D.C. after the state funeral for late President Carter. He will leave on January 9th and he will go to Rome for a 3-day visit, and that also includes visiting the Vatican. The Syrian government plans to increase salaries for many public sector jobs by 400% next month as part of initial efforts to address the country's economic crisis, according to the caretaker finance minister. The funding will come from a combination of state resources, regional aid, and the unfreezing of Syrian assets abroad. Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi will also visit Chad, the Republic of Congo, and Nigeria as part of his annual start-of-the-year tour of the continent. This follows a recent uptick in Chinese lending. Research published last August showed that 2023 marked the first annual increase in Chinese loans to the continent since 2016. French President Macron confirms Elon Musk is directly intervening in elections, including Germany. Japan's Nippon Steel may need to look at a revamp of its growth strategy after U.S. President Joe Biden blocked its proposed $14.9 billion acquisition of U.S. Steel, but its share price could bounce back in the near term, analysts said. A traffic jam is forming at U.S. rocket launch sites. Elon Musk, SpaceX, and other rocket companies are planning to increase flights in the coming years as they ferry their own satellites or payloads for other customers into space. The problem? Only three sites in Florida and California handle most of those U.S. rocket launches, and these locations are expected to become increasingly congested as companies and regulators schedule more missions. Ukrainian forces have launched a major new offensive in Russia's Kursk region, a region that Ukraine captured parts of over the summer but has in the past few months struggled to hold amid pressure from Russian and North Korean forces. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said security guarantees to Kyiv to end Russia's war would only be effective if the United States provides them, and that he hoped to meet U.S. President-elect Donald Trump soon after his inauguration. The State Department has informally notified Congress of a planned $8 billion weapons sale to support Israel's long-term security by resupplying stocks of critical munitions and air defense capabilities. A U.S. official familiar with the details confirmed to CBS News on January 4th. The Taliban are looking to Afghanistan's gemstone resources to revive the nation's economy. Meanwhile, settlers in the occupied West Bank are hopeful that a Trump administration will support their desire to annex parts or all of the territory. The Israeli military has conducted raids in Syria in recent weeks, which it stated are intended to strengthen the defense of Israel's citizens. And now to longer readouts. The president, President Biden, offered a warm welcome and shared some fond reflections on his early days in Congress when yesterday he welcomed the new Democratic Congress members to the White House. He told stories about Senator Mike Mansfield and others taking him under their wing. Quote, "My advice to you is embrace the institution you serve. I really mean it. Improve it. Don't tear it down," unquote. He spoke about the January 6th anniversary, describing democracy as being literally put to the test, and emphasized the challenge of protecting it, drawing many nods around the room. The president reflected on the world entering a truly new era, distinct from the post-Cold War period, and highlighted the importance of alliances and partnerships. He also shared insights from his 40-plus years of knowing President Putin of Russia, noting the evolution he had observed in Putin personally and in Russia's posture toward the United States. He began wrapping up by lamenting the decline in civility in Congress, which he said became especially evident during the time and his time as vice president. He specifically mentioned the gigantic loss of bipartisan launches and gestures alike. Quote, "The single greatest loss we've had is that we don't know each other anymore," unquote, he said. In other news, President Biden signed the Social Security Fairness Act. The president entered with Beth Morifino, the president of the Connecticut Alliance for Retired Americans, who introduced him. Biden thanked Senator Susan Collins, who received a standing ovation for supporting the legislation. He also expressed gratitude to Senator Schumer, who was not present. He announced that 2.5 million Americans would receive a lump sum payment to compensate for benefits not received in 2024 and said, quote, "I said repeatedly, if anyone tried to cut these programs, I'd stop it," unquote. Yesterday, President Biden also was proud to sign into law the Women's Suffrage National Monument Location Act, authorizing the placement of a monument honoring the women's suffrage movement on the National Mall. And more news about President Biden. He also has taken significant action to protect over 625 million acres of U.S. oceans from future offshore oil and gas drilling. This includes safeguarding the Atlantic and Pacific coasts, the eastern Gulf of Mexico, and the northern Bering Sea in Alaska. This move aims to protect coastal communities, marine ecosystems, and local economies from the environmental risks of offshore drilling. Biden's decision is backed by nearly 400 municipalities, over 2,300 elected officials, and more than 70 coastal tribes, all of whom have raised concerns over the environmental, economic, and health threats posed by drilling. This historic action builds on Biden's broader conservation agenda, which has now protected more than 670 million acres of U.S. land and waters, making him the most conservation-focused president in U.S. history. The move is aligned with Biden's Harris administration's climate priorities and commitment to resilient oceans, as well as honoring indigenous rights. Biden has also advanced other significant conservation efforts, including offshore wind projects, national marine sanctuaries, and support for tribal communities as part of a broader plan to protect 30% of U.S. lands and waters by 2030. Now, so to some international news, Venezuelan opposition leader Edmundo González, who claims to have won the July presidential election and is recognized by several countries as president-elect, met with U.S. President Joe Biden on Monday during a regional tour. González stated that the meeting was fruitful and emphasized ongoing contact with U.S. President-elect Donald Trump's team. His visit comes just days before Nicolas Maduro, recognized by Venezuela's top court and electoral authority as the legitimate winner, but side note, he's not, is set to be inaugurated for a third term. González expressed hope for a close relationship with the Trump administration moving forward. The U.S. Defense Department announced on Monday today that it had added Chinese tech giants, including Tencent Holdings, CATL, and several others to a list of companies it claims are linked to China's military. This list, updated annually under U.S. law as the Section 1260H list, now includes 134 companies. Tencent, the parent company of WeChat, and CATL, a major battery maker, are among the new additions. Other companies listed are chipmaker Chengxin Memory Technologies, Quectel Wireless, and drone maker Autel Robotics. The Pentagon also removed six companies it determined no longer met the criteria for the designation. The U.S. House of Representatives Bipartisan Select Committee on China will continue into the new Congress, according to the panel's leaders on Monday. Established in 2023 and led by Republicans, the committee aims to address security and economic challenges posed by China, the U.S.'s primary geopolitical rival. Its continuation comes ahead of President-elect Trump's second term inauguration on January 20th. While Trump has expressed admiration for Chinese leader Xi Jinping, his first term saw a trade war with China that disrupted global supply chains and contributed to economic challenges. The committee, which operates without legislative powers, has promoted bills to counter Chinese threats, some of which have become law. It has also criticized U.S. companies and academic institutions for insufficiently addressing risks from Beijing. The panel is led by Republican Chairman John Molinar and Democratic Ranking Member Raja Krishnamurthy, who have emphasized their bipartisan cooperation amid growing tensions with China. Now, U.S. President-elect Donald Trump said on Monday today that he and Chinese leader Xi Jinping have been communicating through representatives, and he anticipates a positive relationship between the two leaders. Trump described Xi as a powerful figure respected in China and expressed hope they would get along very well. However, Trump reiterated his stance that economic relations must be fair, accusing China of ripping off the U.S. economically. He invited Xi and other foreign leaders to his inauguration, though experts doubt Xi will attend. Trump has appointed several China hawks to key positions in his administration and has threatened new tariffs on Chinese goods unless Beijing takes stronger action against fentanyl trafficking. President-elect Donald Trump on Sunday called on his fellow Republicans in Congress to unite and pass a massive legislation package that combines his top priorities: tax cuts, border security, and increased domestic energy production. Trump suggested that Republicans could cover the cost potentially in the trillions of dollars by raising tariffs on imported goods. In a post on his Truth Social platform, Trump urged Republicans to get smart, tough, and send the bill to my desk to sign as soon as possible. His call comes as Republicans control both chambers of Congress by narrow margins and have been debating whether to pass these measures separately or combine them into one package, as Trump advocates. A single bill could allow Republicans to quickly fulfill Trump's campaign promises, but it also risks alienating members with concerns over specific provisions. For instance, Republicans from high-tax states like New York and New Jersey have expressed interest in revising some elements of the 2017 tax cuts, which negatively impacted their constituents. Trump is also pushing for the elimination of tax on tipped income, which could further increase the overall cost of the legislation. Republicans plan to use complex budget rules that would enable them to pass the package with simple majorities, avoiding the need for Democrats' support, but also limiting the scope of the package. The narrow Republican majority in the House, which is 219 to 215, adds another layer of complexity, as unity will be crucial to passing such significant legislation. U.S. President-elect Trump aides are exploring a new approach to tariffs, considering levies only on critical imports related to national or economic security, according to a report by Washington Post. This plan marks a shift from Trump's previous campaign promise to impose a broad 10% tariff on global imports and a 60% tariff on Chinese goods, which trade experts warned could disrupt trade and escalate costs. The new strategy would focus on specific sectors such as defense, critical medical supplies, and energy production, including items like steel, farm industry, and rare earth minerals. While discussions are ongoing and details are not finalized, this targeted tariff approach reflects Trump's goal to revitalize key industries in the U.S. Meanwhile, right after the report was published in Washington Post, U.S. President-elect Trump on Monday rejected the report, said and claimed that his aides were considering a tariff plan targeting only critical imports. In a post on Truth Social, Trump dismissed the story as inaccurate, asserting that the report, based on anonymous sources, was false. He accused the newspaper of spreading fake news, emphasizing that his tariff policy would not be scaled back as suggested. Well, time will tell. Following a Medal of Honor ceremony at the White House on Friday, seven soldiers were inducted into the Pentagon's Hall of Heroes during an off-site ceremony at Joint Base Amaya Henderson Hall in Arlington, Virginia. The honorees included five Korean War veterans and two Vietnam War veterans, including Kenneth J. David, who was the only living recipient. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin, along with Army leadership, praised the soldiers' extraordinary bravery, noting that they came from diverse backgrounds but shared an unwavering commitment to duty and sacrifice. The ceremony underscored the long-awaited recognition of these heroes, who were honored decades after their courageous actions. Austin also acknowledged the efforts of those who work tirelessly to bring their stories to light, including fellow soldiers, families, journalists, and members of Congress. These heroes risked everything for their country, Austin said, urging others to draw inspiration from their selflessness. Now, the U.S. Consumer Financial Protection Bureau filed a lawsuit on Monday against Vanderbilt Mortgage and Finance, a unit of Clayton Homes, a manufactured housing business owned by Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway. The CFPB alleges that Vanderbilt pushed borrowers into risky and unaffordable loans for homes purchased through Clayton, contributing to financial hardship and, in some cases, the loss of homes. The lawsuit claims that Vanderbilt Mortgage ignored clear and obvious signs that borrowers could not afford the loans they were being offered. The company is also accused of charging borrowers additional fees and penalties when they fell behind on payments, further exacerbating their financial struggles. Clayton Homes, which is the largest manufactured home builder in the U.S., has not yet responded to requests for comment. Now, Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau announced on Monday that he will step down as a leader of the Liberal Party, though he will remain in office until a successor is chosen. This decision comes after growing pressure from within his party, with an increasing number of Liberal legislators publicly urging him to resign. Trudeau, who has been facing declining approval ratings and poor polling numbers, held a press conference this morning and officially confirmed his intention to step down. Keir Starmer, the UK's Prime Minister, defended his tenure as Britain's Director of Public Prosecutions on Monday, responding to accusations from US billionaire Elon Musk about his handling of sexual abuse cases involving grooming gangs. Musk, a supporter of Trump, criticized Starmer for failing to prosecute these gangs during his time as DPP between 2008 and 2013, particularly gangs of men, often of South Asian descent, who sexually exploited young girls. Although Starmer did not directly name Musk, he strongly rebunked the accusations, asserting that he had taken decisive action, including reopening cases that had been closed and launching the first major prosecution of an Asian grooming gang. Starmer described his critics as more focused on self-interest than on supporting victims. Norwegian Prime Minister Jonas Gahr Støre expressed concerns on Monday about Musk's direct involvement in the domestic politics of countries outside the United States. Speaking to Norwegian public broadcaster on RK, Støre criticized Musk for using his significant social media influence and vast economic resources to interfere in other nations' political affairs. He emphasized that this behavior was inappropriate for relations between democracies and allies, and suggested that if Musk continues to engage in Norwegian politics, the country's politicians should collectively distance themselves from such efforts. Austria's political landscape is in turmoil following the resignation of Chancellor Karl Nehammer and the collapse of coalition talks aimed at forming a centrist government, with the far-right Freedom Party emerging as the largest party in September's parliamentary election. Its leader, Herbert Kickl, is now vying to lead the next government. Kickl met with President Alexander Van der Bellen on Monday, hoping to be tasked with forming a coalition government after failed attempts by the Conservative People's Party to forge a three-party or two-party alliance with the FPO. The FPO, which secured over 29% of the vote in the election, has never led Austria's government but has been part of coalition governments in the past. Despite his party's strong electoral performance, Kickl was frustrated by Van der Bellen's initial refusal to task him with forming a government, as the president instead gave the mandate to OVP leader Nehammer. However, Newhammer's coalition talks crumbled over the weekend, forcing his resignation. Now, Herbert Kickl, leader of Austria's far-right, Eurosceptic, and Russia-friendly Freedom Party, the FPO, is poised to become now the country's next chancellor, after the president finally tasked him with forming a coalition government. Kickl's party emerged as the largest in September election, despite his abrasive style and deeply controversial views on issues like immigration and gender politics. Kickl has strategically positioned himself as a serious leader, appealing to voters frustrated with the country's economic challenges. His reputation as a skilled strategist was evident in his ability to moderate his tone and rally support before the election, despite his controversial past, including conspiracy theories and opposition to sanctions on Russia. Kickl's rise comes after a failed attempt to form a coalition without the FPO, forcing the resignation of Conservative Chancellor Karl Nehammer, as I just mentioned. Although Kickl is known for his divisive rhetoric and support for radical positions, including challenges Austria's neutrality on the war in Ukraine, his party's success is rooted in a populist campaign that capitalized on economic concerns and opposition to COVID-19 restrictions. His potential coalition with the center-right OVP remains uncertain given their disagreements on key issues like the budget deficit and the war in Ukraine. Despite Kickl's controversial past and ties to conspiracy theories, his calculated political strategy has positioned him to potentially lead Austria's next government. The United States is finalizing steps to resolve longstanding obstacles preventing a civil nuclear partnership with India, U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan announced on Monday. The two countries have been discussing U.S. nuclear reactor sales to India since mid-2000s, but Indian liability rules, which place the burden of accident compensation on operators rather than plant manufacturers, have hindered progress. The deal, originally signed in 2007 under President George W. Bush, marked a significant step in allowing the U.S. to export civilian nuclear technology to India. However, India's nuclear compensation laws have delayed the country's goal of adding a nuclear power by 2030. Sullivan's remarks in New Delhi come ahead of President-elect Trump's inauguration as the U.S. looks to strengthen ties with India. The two nations also plan to discuss a wide range of issues, including China's impact on regional infrastructure, artificial intelligence, space exploration, and military licensing during Sullivan's visit. The Biden administration is preparing to impose new sanctions on Russia in response to its ongoing war in Ukraine, focusing on tankers transporting Russian oil sold above the $60 per barrel price cap. The move targets Russia's shadow fleet of aging ships that have been used to circumvent the cap, which is designed to reduce Moscow's oil revenue. These tankers are often considered less safe and more prone to environmental risks, according to shipping experts. The sanctions are part of a broader strategy to undermine Russia's financial capacity to sustain its invasion of Ukraine. Since Russia's invasion in February 2022, the U.S. has already sanctioned dozens of such vessels. The sanctions will likely extend to individuals and entities involved in oil trade networks that violate the price cap, with discussions also including possible penalties on Chinese banks supporting the transactions. While the cap has prompted Russia to shift oil sales to countries like China and India, which buy Russian crude at a discount, the U.S. remains focused on curbing Russia's ability to fund the war. U.S. Treasury Secretary Yellen previously noted that further sanctions on tankers could be forthcoming. The sanctions are expected to be part of a large package, with most details anticipated in the coming days. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken made a final push for Gaza ceasefire on Monday, urging for a truce deal before President Joe Biden leaves office. Blinken's remarks came after a Hamas official confirmed that the group had cleared a list of 34 hostages to be released as part of a potential ceasefire. On Monday, also, North Korea fired a ballistic missile into the sea off its east coast, coinciding with U.S. Secretary of State Blinken's visit to Seoul during a period of political instability in South Korea. South Korea's military confirmed the launch, and Japan's Coast Guard reported that the missile had fallen into the sea. Earlier, Blinken met with South Korea's acting president Choi Sang-mok, emphasizing the U.S.'s unwavering defense commitment to South Korea and calling for enhanced diplomatic and security cooperation to deter further North Korean provocations. South Korea's anti-corruption agency, the Corruption Investigation Office, four high-ranking officials, requested police assistance on Monday to execute an arrest warrant for impeached President Yoon Suk-yeol. The move follows a failed attempt last Friday when a tense standoff with Yoon's presidential guards, who formed a human chain to block investigators, prevented the warrant's execution. And finally, Chile's President Gabriel Boric became the first leader in the Americas to visit South Pole, arriving at the Amundsen Skoal South Pole Station on January 3, 2025. His visit underscores Chile's commitment to its territorial claims in Antarctica and its role in scientific research, particularly concerning climate change. Accompanied by scientists and cabinet members, Boric emphasized the importance of Chile's growing presence in the Antarctic research, stating that the country has positioned itself as a gateway to the region. Only two other leaders from New Zealand and Norway had previously visited the South Pole, despite competing territorial claims by various nations. Antarctica remains a scientific preserve under the 1961 Antarctic Treaty. And that's all for today. I highly encourage you to check out tonight's premiere, 8 p.m. Eastern. We have a premiere of this exclusive interview that I conducted yesterday with the war drone expert Carl Larson, who has fought in Ukraine, has co-founded a huge, amazing nonprofit organization where he works with other 170 companies to provide drones to Ukraine. He talked about Ukraine, what happened, what is happening, what to expect given the change in U.S. administration. And also we talked about New Jersey and New York situation with the drones. Remember the mystery over New York and New Jersey? He explained what it was. Are we ready for any potential impact on this? And what does he expect to happen next? So don't miss it tonight, only on YouTube. Tap the video and please watch it at 8 p.m. Eastern or anytime thereafter. And I also, of course, went live with AM Actual News this morning. We'll do it tomorrow again, only on YouTube. So all the links are in description. Please subscribe if you're listening from the newsletter. I thank you so much. And please read our newsletter. It's free and it's actual news. See you tomorrow back on the Honest Podcast and Actual News Podcast. And this is Olga Nestrova. Have a fantastic evening and a good night.